You're listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
Well, this is Xavier Cronin, senior editor of Recycled Plastics Weekly Report from Opus. We're going to be talking today about what is and is not recycled when you put your plastic waste into the curbside dumpster and then you roll it out for many of us to the curbside and it's picked up. Some of that is recycled, some is not, depends where you live. That's why we've titled this podcast, When is a Recyclable Not a Recyclable? I've been writing about plastic waste and rubbish for about 10 years with Petrochem Wire. And with me today to talk about this recycling dynamic is Michael Lipton, who is president of Arizona Pacific Plastics out there in Phoenix, Arizona. Michael, you want to introduce yourself there, please?
Sure. I'm Michael Lipton with Arizona Pacific Plastics. I am the owner. The company has been around for 15 years. I started the company 15 years ago when it was part of a paper company. I started that division to do plastics. And 15 years later, I am now the owner. And we recycle about 19 million pounds of recycled plastic per year, which is mostly all post-industrial recyclables.
Okay, that's great. You know, just to jump right in, the idea of or the designation of post-industrial plastic waste versus post-consumer and how the average person who puts, say, a Gatorade plastic bottle, some Amazon packing blocks, a milk jug into the commingled dumpster. How does that stuff differ from the plastic waste that you actually recycle?
So I'm getting it, you could say it's pre-consumer, it's post-industrial slash pre-consumer. So that, what that means is anytime you're manufacturing anything, it doesn't matter a widget, it doesn't matter what it is, there's going to be waste. There's going to be overruns, there's going to be misprinting, it's going to say Pepsi instead of Pepsi, it's going to be ingredients that are wrong, anything could be considered scrap. So I get that material right off the manufacturing line, it's clean. In this case, let's just say maybe it's a yogurt cup. The company's manufacturing yogurt cups. So again, maybe the ingredients are wrong or there's just a deformity or an overrun or a misprint. So we get that clean off the manufacturing line. Then we recycle it and we process it. But right then it's considered post-industrial. It's still post-industrial until it goes home with you. You buy it in the store. But now once it's filled with yogurt or whatever it's filled with, now it's post-consumer. So it's kind of touched by the human form. Before that, I get it. It's not touched. It's clean and not touched by anybody.
So the waste you recycle is actually clean waste in a very general sense. It's never made it out into the world to be used, so to speak.
Right. That's correct.
And what are the major costs associated with the collection of the plastic waste that you get trucked in, assuming it's all, most of it is trucked into your plant out there in Phoenix? What are the costs associated with taking that plastic scrap, say, rejected cups that have the wrong stamp on it, and then you take it and you grind it up into little flakes, and then you sell that to a customer, then the customer will take that plastic flake and use it to make new plastic material. What are some of the costs associated and the different markets that are comprised of this recycling industry?
Recycling is a very expensive proposition, a very expensive business to be in. There's a ton of different costs. The barrier to entry is pretty high. So you're going to need trucks and trailers and forklifts and concrete and shredders and grinders and sorters and people. So it's very, very expensive to get into it and then maintain. So the collection process, how we operate is that we will send a 53-foot trailer, the tractor trailer, out to the vendor. They will either do a live load, which means load it right then and there, or we'll drop an empty trailer, then they'll fill it as they produce, and they'll fill the trailer up in containers of some sort, or however it's contained, on pallets. They fill it up and then they send it into us. We get it in, we have to segregate it, we have to evaluate it, then we reprocess it, like you said. We grind it up, we package it, we weigh it, and then depending on what material that is, we make a kind of a custom blend that goes to different customers, depending on what they're looking for. Then it goes back out and they make a new product out of it. So that kind of completes the recycle loop.
But can you talk about how much it will actually cost, you know, assuming this isn't something that's private and you don't want to share, but say a truckload of rejected plastic cups from somewhere in California or some place where you have your trailers loaded up with this stuff. How much does it cost? And then how much is the cost to take it and evaluate it and chop it up and grind it up and then send it on to your customers, even in a general sense, so people have an idea of the cost of recycling plastic, at least in this situation where you have, you know, your shop out there in the desert taking in all of this plastic waste.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's a challenging part of what we do, is that every deal is different. So every material that we touch has a different cost associated with it. On a general sense, you could say maybe it's about 5 to 7 cents a pound just for us to touch it. But what makes it complicated is that there's thousands of different types of plastic. And then each one is a different deal. Each vendor, we provide custom programs for the vendor and for the customer. It really is just a lot to process. If someone was new coming in, trying to get into the business, it's every deal is different. So it kind of can get, I've been doing this for 15 years. So to me, it's in my blood. But for someone, a novice, or for the general public, it would kind of get overwhelming because it's just so different. But for the most part, if you wanted to use a rule of thumb, I would say maybe 5 to 7, 8 cents a pound.
Per truckload, that's about 40,000 pounds, right? So, you know, people can do the math themselves, but just to try to understand the commodity of plastic waste. And as you mentioned, there's literally hundreds of different types of plastics. So you pay 5 to 7 cents a pound for truckloads of this plastic waste. And then,
well, that's just our cost. So that doesn't, now it runs the gamut between, some people will say, the plant manager will say, I don't care if you pay us for this. Just please get this stuff out of here. It's our trash. It's our garbage. It's our whatever. It's our waste. Just get it out of here. I don't care what you do with it. Just get it out of here. I don't want it to go to the landfill, but I just want it out of here. So that it would probably be the best vendor for us. And then it runs everything in the middle to all the way to the other side, which is, I have A, B, C, and D, and I know what it's worth, and I want you to pay me top dollar for it. So that's why every deal is different. So the cost would be, as I mentioned before, the grinding and the sorting and the people and the machines and all that other wonderful stuff is the cost of it. But then there's also could be the material cost of what I'm actually paying for the material. And sometimes I charge for the material. It just depends on what it is. So again, it really is just a, if you get into the nitty gritty, it's every deal is different.
So somebody who is trying to understand how much a manufacturing plant is going to pay for recycled plastic in the flake form, correct me if I'm wrong, most of what you sell, you grind it up back into a little flake, and then you put the flakes into containers. And
we call it regrind. It's regrind. Flake is something a little bit different, but yeah, it's regrind. So we grind it up. It's reground, right? So we grind it up, we package it, we sell it to someone, and whatever, that depends on the commodity. It could be, you know, maybe as low as 14, 15 cents a pound. It could be up to maybe 40, 50, 60, 70 cents a pound. Would I love to be doing the 70 cents a pound stuff every load? Sure, but it doesn't work out that way. So it runs really to anything. Maybe like those yogurt cups could be somewhere in the 20s. Bottle cap could be somewhere in the 20s, like a, let's say, polycarbonate or an engineering grade material could be in the 60s. So it really just depends.
Some people find it incredible, me included, that you could actually buy in your business an entire truckload, 40,000 pounds or so, of nothing but plastic bottle caps. Can you just explain how that's possible?
Yeah, well, I mean, what will really blow your mind is that when we're buying something, so whenever the feedstock comes in, it's right about 10, 12,000 pounds, not 40,000 typically. It's about 10,000. So, but that's a tractor trailer load of material. So if we go to your example of bottle caps, when we send a load out, we grind the stuff and we package it. Then it goes out about 40,000 pounds. But that means I need to get four tractor trailer loads in with, and each load contains about 48 boxes. So that means, even if I say it's 50 boxes, 200 boxes of bottle caps, big, they're called Gaylords, they're big cardboard boxes. I need about 200 of those just to make one load going out. So you can imagine the space it is, and you can imagine how many thousands of individual caps that would be, millions possibly.
So if someone were to say, as large as the U.S. is, and we're one of the largest consumers of plastic, still, how could there be that many rejected plastic bottle caps to constitute a sub-market of this overall plastic recycling industry? It's just, it's baffling. How could there be that many bad bottle caps made at the plants that make bottle caps?
Right. Well, I mean, it's also, all those bottle caps need to go into bottles, right? So how many people do you see walking around with water bottles? I mean, it's part of our American culture now. You know, if you, everybody has a bottle in their hand, maybe it's a Yeti or a, you know, not a, it's a reusable bottle, but anywhere you go, or you go to a meeting, want a bottle of water? Do you want a bottle of water? Do you want a bottle? I mean, everything, everywhere we go. So every one of those caps has a bottle, and we have a, whatever it is, 365, 380 million people, and we're all consuming plastic every day, all day long.
It's extraordinary. So the plastic plants making bottles and caps, obviously, it's just inevitable that there's going to be rejects. I don't want to go on too much on that. So then you basically take the bottle caps and 10,000 pounds in, 40,000 pounds out. The 40,000 pounds out is little regrind flakes. And then you'll sell that. Just one example without, you know, giving away, you know, any market details you don't want. But what's an example of one of your customers who would buy 40,000 pounds of ground up plastic bottle waste?
Yeah. So there would be three major types of customers that would purchase that regrind load. One would be an end user. So that would be someone that's making a product and can use this regrind directly into their extruder and making a new product. So they'll buy, they're making something and they'll take this and they'll reuse it right then and there. So that's customer number one. Customer number two would be a compounder, it's called. So that would be like someone that's making a special blend. They're going to pelletize it. They're going to make, it's called repro, reprocessed resin, repro. They're going to make repro out of it, and they'll buy from Michael, and they'll buy from Joe, and they'll buy from Xavier, and they'll buy from whomever. And they'll make a special blend, and then they'll sell a product, depending on the melt or whatever the customer needs. And then they'll use it and they'll make their own extra. So they're like a middleman, but they're also compounding. They're making the special formula. And then customer number three would be export. So that would go in a shipping container overseas to wherever it goes. We're on the West Coast, so it would probably go to Asia or India. And that's where it would go. And then they would make some sort of, either to an end user or more particularly, probably it's brokered to a, probably to either, maybe it could be a customer or a end user, just a compounder or an end user. But those are the three main types.
And you will sell to them. Can you give an example of a specific customer, or is that, you know, you don't want to name names, but say an end user who's making new products, and including this recycled plastic bottle regrind, what might they use it for, say, pipe, plastic pipe?
I mean, it really could be, usually it's, you know, it's not going to be food or medical. That's important. So even though I might get food or medical grade in, so I might get, again, the bottle caps, or we get these things called runners, which are scrap from medical grade manufacturing or injection molding. We might get something in that it is from a food or medical or medical device manufacturer. But once it leaves their facility, unless we have a clean room and we're FDA certified and all that stuff, which we're not, we cannot produce a medical grade or food grade material. So this would have to go to someone making a durable product that doesn't have to be food grade, maybe a trash can or a barrel or a parking block or a container, a tub, a tote, anything like that.
So that bottle cap that is not usable will end up, at least some of it, ground up and then reused, and say the trash can that you buy at Walmart or wherever, that may have this type of recycled plastic as not the entire trash can, for instance, but typically you're seeing recycled plastic plus virgin plastic resin. I mean, how do you describe?
Yeah, I don't know we don't know, because we're not privy to that, what the percentage of recycle is in their product. But they want to make it out of recycle because A, it's cheaper for them. B, they can advertise and market they're using it out of reusable material. So they want to do that. But they make their own special sauce. So they have their own, some manufacturers will only, and I have these as clients, they'll only use virgin material. They won't use any recycle. They think there's a stigma or there's a problem with recycle. And then some of them really push the envelope to almost being 100% recyclable. They have to use some virgin, but they'll be almost 100%. One of our clients, we have several clients actually, customers, that make the curbside trash cans. So that bottle cap eventually becomes a curbside trash can. So it's actually holding let's say curbside recycling bin. It's actually holding the very material. It's made of the very material that it's going to recycle. So that's kind of cool.
Would there be any reason to think that moving to the residential curbside recycling, you know, the name of this podcast, when's a recyclable, not a recyclable, just going back to like the average person who puts their commingled cardboard, tin cans, newspapers, plastic, all in the same single stream dumpster, and included would be some bottles and bottle caps. Is there any reason that that plastic would not end up in the same type of stream where eventually it would make itself to one of these manufacturers who are making trash cans or plastic pipe, plastic whatever? Are the two segments we're talking about here post-consumer, plastic that's been used, and then post-industrial, the stuff that you recycle? Is there a distinction to be made?
I mean, it was the same material at one point. But now when you're throwing it into the single stream, you have cardboard in there, you have the spaghetti sauce jar, you got newspaper, you got, who knows, the dry cleaning bag is in there. Once it goes all single stream into that, into your curbside bin, and it goes to Never Never Land, and off it goes, you never think about it again until next Tuesday's recycling, off it goes into a MRF, which is a municipal recovery facility or multiple recovery recycling facility, whatever you want to call it. That goes there, and then it goes on to conveyor belts all over the place. It looks like a M.C. Escher painting with staircases going to nowhere and all over the place. And they're sorting and they're doing, and could be people power, could be the human eye sorting it, it could be optical sorters, which are robotic or they're mechanical, and they're pulling out the different things. Cardboard and metal are easy. It's easy to identify. It's easy to identify for a person or a machine. But then when you get into the different types of plastic, that's where it gets tricky. So a lot of that, unfortunately, doesn't get recycled. And it goes into the landfill.
So the whole idea, and this has been written about in general, some media, it's a very complicated issue, but the idea, at least in the United States, where all of your recyclables go into this same dumpster, the assumption you would think from the resident would be, oh, that's great. I'm recycling. And yet, because it's all together, why has that become just, you know, you're in the business 15 years. Has that become the standard when the separation of the different recyclables is really what's needed? And it's done in many parts of the world. I mean, plastic is plastic, metal is metal, paper is paper,
Well, it's easy, right? We want everything to be easy and we don't want to pay a lot of money for it. So it's easy. We don't pay a lot for it. Off it goes. And I feel good about myself because I recycle. But it really does need to be separated. I don't have the answer as to the break it down to really how we should do it. It all costs money. Nobody wants to pay for it. But all these things theoretically can be recycled. It's a good solution. Throw it all together and let's just off it goes. But by doing that, we're really not capturing. We're only capturing really a fraction of what really does get recycled. But it can be done. Just, you know, that takes money and dedication.
Why would it cost more money if just on a very common sense level, okay, here's my plastic waste, I'll put it here. Here's my newspapers, I'll put it here. Here's the spaghetti sauce can, right? Okay, I got tuna fish here. Here's the Amazon packing. I mean, who doesn't have Amazon packing?
Who's doing the sorting? Is it the person at their house or is it the person at the MRF?
The person at the house, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, who roll the dumpster out to the curbside, or if you're in a condo, wherever the recyclables go. But why would that be considered so complicated and costly to have self-MRFing, so to speak?
Well, people aren't going to do that. They're lazy. Not to be negative or, you know, but people are not going to do that. So unless there's a kicker at it, you know, are you going to get rewarded or are you going to get a punishment? There's got to be one or the other. I think our country recycles at best, maybe, 30% of everything? And that's being pretty generous. In Japan, they recycle almost 90% of what is out there. And they have recycling police and they'll go around, they'll go to each bin and they'll check it and they'll write you up and you'll get a fine. It's such a small country. They have to do it. They have no choice. They don't have what we have, being such a huge country. So they have to do it and they recycle and people take it seriously. I don't want to get a fine. Who wants that? So they take it seriously. They have a recycling police and they go over and they capture quite a bit of material.
Are you saying America needs recycling police?
Do we need? I'm not saying anything. I plead the fifth.
No, I'm sorry. That was a joke. The bottom line is we have so much land that we have the luxury of burying reams of plastic waste.
Yeah. So, I mean, you drive 30 minutes out of any major city, maybe not the Northeast, but really any major city in the United States, and you're in the middle of nowhere. So what's it going to be? I mean, if you want to have $30 a month recycling fee or $500 a month recycling fee, well, I'm not going to pay that. Oh, okay. Well, then we're going to drive for 30 minutes outside the city and then off it goes into the landfill. And that's it. Out of sight, out of mind. Or we, you know, in the 70s, we had the garbage barge around New York City and it just drives around all over the place and there it goes. So what's it going to be? I mean, if you want it cheap and out of mind and out of sight, then it's going to go into the ground probably.
But of course, it's not the people who are driving there. In some places where they literally don't have pickup, you drive your trash to the transfer station. But of course, it's not the people who are driving their trash out to East Podunk. It's the trash companies, and that's what they get paid for. And they will say,
right.
And they will say, well, what do you want us to do with it? Right.
The trash company, they know better. There's a reason, you know, Republic Services and Waste Management, not to disparage those guys, but I mean, they're public companies and they make a lot of money, but they're paid to haul it. They're paid to haul it off. And then, oh, well, you want us to sort it and recycle it? Well, you're gonna have to pay us again. So where's the money in it? Where's the money?
Right, but again, just to go back to the I'm sorry to interrupt, but just in the closing minutes here, just to go back to why would you need to charge extra for simply asking Mr. and Mrs. Jones or the kids to separate four or five different types of plastic. Why would that?
How are you going to contain it? How is it going to get contained? How is it going to get picked up? Where are they going to put it? They're going to need an extra bin. They're going to need five bins. Well, my street's small. I don't have room for five bins. I only can put one bin. And you know what? You're lucky they're even I'm even doing any of this. I'm just going to throw it on the garbage because I don't care. So again, I don't want to be negative, but there's a sense of reality. And some citizens or some people, they might take 5-10 bins. Great, I'll separate it all. Other ones, they won't. Also, sometimes, a lot of this stuff, you have dry cleaning bags, for example, it doesn't weigh anything. Our business, a lot of it is based on weight. So if I put 100 dry cleaning bags in there, it seems like a lot, and maybe it weighs 2 pounds. So how are we going to handle that?
Okay, just in the final minutes here, as somebody in the business, are you optimistic that the United States will recycle more plastic waste in the next 5 or 10 years, just to throw out a time frame? There's been so much written about it. The Great Pacific Garbage Patch, plastic waste everywhere. The U.S. is a slacker when it comes to recycling plastic compared certainly to Canada and Germany, Scandinavian countries, for one. Are you optimistic that there, this idea of the Americans just not really understanding how plastic recycling works and not wanting to pay for it, the optimistic we might turn it around here and recycle more plastic waste?
I believe it can be done, and I am optimistic in the human spirit that we don't want to do bad things. We want to do the right thing, which is keeping it out of the landfill and using the material. It's not plastic isn't inherently a problem. It's the people's way they treat the plastic. So I think it can be done. But again, I do believe in a risk reward scenario. And if there's no risk or there's no reward or there's no punishment, I don't see how that would change. We'd have to have some sort of auditing and government, intervention there, or the manufacturers intervening. But, it's somehow I'm not optimistic that that's going to get done unless we really take it seriously. The good news is that the technology is there. It can be done. Just that we have to make a concerted effort to do it.
The garbage police. You can say it. We need the garbage police.
Garbage police? Sure. Okay. I'll you know what? Make me the czar of the garbage police. I'll get that cleaned up tomorrow. No problem. So, President Trump, if you're listening, I volunteer for the garbage police, but it'll cost you.
No, but the example of Japan, I mean, it's pretty simple. If you get caught, I don't know.
They bought in. The people bought in. I mean, that's what it took. It took to have the garbage police in there and guilting people. And we're a small nation and we're made up of islands. And hey, we don't have the space. We're not America, man. We can't throw this just right. Guys, we're all in this together. We need to do it. So that, and then being fined, that did it. And they've, like I said, look up the, I don't have the statistic in front of me, but they recycle quite a bit. They really do.
Well, that's great. It's been great to have you, Michael Lipton, president of Arizona Pacific Plastics out there in the desert in Phoenix, transplanted Long Island boy. I'm sure he misses the cold weather we're having here, but it's been great talking with him, and we hope to talk with him again in the future for future shows. Thank you. I'm Xavier Cronin with Opus, and we'll wrap it up right now.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.